1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news talk and sports is on 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
I'm Linda Kenyon in Washington. President Biden has unveiled his budget plan. CBS's Stephen Portnoy has the story.
The president's budget includes a number of ideas that failed to advance when Democrats controlled both houses of Congress, including hundreds of billions of dollars for child and elder care and universal preschool. To pay for it all, Mr. Biden would raise the corporate tax rate, impose a new wealth tax on America's richest families, and increase rates on married couples earning over $450,000 a year. The budget allows the president to contrast his plans with Republicans.
They want to cut tax for the wealthy and large corporations.
House Speaker Kevin McCarthy calls the Biden budget completely unserious. Stephen Portnoy, CBS News, Washington.
Republican presidential candidate Nikki Haley is proposing her own reforms to big budget federal programs.
I'm Steve Dorsey in Washington.
We need to fix it.
Republican presidential candidate Nikki Haley told an Iowa crowd she'd support reforms to Social Security and Medicare.
So the first thing you do is you change the retirement age of the young people coming up, so that we can try and have some sort of system for them.
Haley says those benefits should also be limited for the rich.
Democrats are supporting raising taxes on the wealthy. The CEO of Norfolk Southern was on Capitol Hill today testifying about that train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio.
Alan Shaw apologized, saying he is deeply sorry.
We have been cooperating fully with the NTSB's investigation.
The CEO said so far there is no indication that those on board the train did anything wrong.
The preliminary report found that the Norfolk Southern crew was operating the train below the speed limit and in an approved manner.
But he said it's clear the safety mechanisms in place were not enough. He promised improvements.
I'm going to make sure they've got the right training and the right technology.
That's CBS's Steve Futterman with that report. Well wishes pouring in as Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell recovers at a Washington, D.C. hospital. CBS's Nicole D'Antonio.
A spokesperson for the Kentucky Republicans says he tripped at a local hotel during a private dinner. He has been admitted to the hospital where he is receiving treatment.
The 81-year-old Republican leader suffered a concussion. A massive Russian missile barrage rained down on sections of Ukraine last night. CBS's MTS Taib is in the Ukrainian city of Dnipro.
The far west of the country, Lviv, which has largely been spared the kind of devastation we've seen in the east of the country. You see homes reduced to rubble. You see people having lost their lives, lying in their beds.
NASA Administrator Bill Nelson with the agency's top priority.
NASA is laser focused on Mars.
This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
At Charmin, we heard you shouldn't talk about going to the bathroom in public, so we decided to sing about it.
When you're rolling Charmin, I'm just soft on the potty. Let's just pull some roll it back.
UltraSoft is irresistibly soft and more absorbent, so you can use less. Enjoy the go with Charmin.
Hi, this is Drew Barrymore. Do you know what my idea of the perfect night is? First, make a bunch of complicated plans, and then cancel all those plans. Instead, spend the night streaming movies and TV shows on Pluto TV for free, including my show. There are tons of live channels and even more on demand. Free to stream all you want on Pluto TV and never pay a thing. Stream now, pay never. Pluto TV.
Weather brought to you by you and your great business. For just $100 a week, this sponsorship is designed to make your phones ring.
But the offer absolutely ends March 15th. Log on civicmedia.us/weather. civicmedia.us/weather.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. A winter weather advisory continues until 4 a.m. early tomorrow morning. Snow likely tonight, otherwise overcast. Lows around 21, north winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Chance for snow tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 29, cloudy. Lows dip down to about 3 above. Tomorrow night, 1 to 3 inches of snow tonight. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 27.
Hello, world. Welcome to WFHR's Director's Cut session.
I counted.
Yeah?
I counted. It is, this is 18.
Is this it is 18?
I made sure that it was 18.
Nice. Yeah. Nicely done. Your host and program director here, James J. Mailoff, with my partner in art, our head of production, that voice you just heard right there, Seth Habhacker. Good morning. Good afternoon, Seth.
Good afternoon.
Evening. Whenever you're
whatever it is.
To
it's yes, on a it podcast. It doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
We are...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say we are joined right now by local poet, local author, Rick Humphreys. Rick, good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. And all that stuff.
Yeah, good whatever it is.
Yes.
Yes. Good.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us, Rick. How you doing?
I'm doing good so far.
Good. Good to hear, man. We really appreciate this time. I do want to send a shout out to Connie Tomsky-Fayville from FRM Music. Connie helping us set this up and everything and getting us to meet you and have you in here today. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Appreciate Connie as well.
She's something. She really is. Rick, I want to dive right into the heavy questions. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, where you're from, some of that? Your origin story, if you will.
Okay, and you want kind of both the physical, where I'm from, and maybe some other...
Sure.
This
is going to be fun. This is
going to be fun. Okay. Yeah. Well, I've moved around a few times, so I started out born near Boston, but didn't stay long enough to pick up an accent or any of the culture, and then moved to a little town in Illinois called Sandwich, Illinois.
Yeah.
Then ended up moving here, and I've lived in a number of different sized cities and little towns in Wisconsin, and then I lived in Minneapolis for almost 20 years, so a good mix, but I'm definitely a Midwestern boy. I'm going to stay here. So it'll be somewhere in this area. So.
You're doing this show with an Illinois kid and a Minnesota kid. So you're just covered all your bases right there.
All right.
Rick, when it comes to your what got you into this, why you wanted to write, where did that start? What were the earliest days you remember of writing? How young were you?
I think I was about 17. And I was just a troubled young adult, and it stayed that way for a while. That's a whole nother show. But, but I think I didn't know. I had things that I was thinking and feeling that I didn't know who to tell. And I didn't know how to express it. But I could put it down on paper, and I could start to look at what was going on inside and try to sort of figure it out. And that's... the beginning of it.
I started writing when I was 12. My mom is a huge, huge reader, and she gave me the idea of, I dealt with a lot of trauma at a young age, and I wouldn't talk to therapists, I wouldn't talk to many people about it. She said, well, will you talk to yourself about it? And she gave me an old typewriter, and I started working on that, and I didn't have an intention, but I started writing, and before I knew it, I started kind of having therapy with the typewriter, like, and getting all these things out that I didn't feel comfortable even talking about out loud to myself in a room alone. But with that typewriter, I was completely comfortable. Was that some of what you're talking about there? Because I think a lot of writers can relate to that.
The comfort came later, I think. I was really muddling around. I think the first 10 years or so, I think I really stunk as a writer, but I didn't know it. It was out of need. I needed to do this. It didn't matter if anybody else liked it. And then, because I kept at it and didn't know I stunk at the beginning, I got better eventually.
Right.
I think that's a great thing to bring up. I don't know an author alive that hasn't talked. I've heard Stephen King talk about this quite a bit, where his early work, nobody will ever see that because it's horrible and all this. But he needed to do that to get to Cujo, to get to Christine, to get to all these other books and everything. But I've heard a lot of athletes talk about this. Muhammad Ali famously talks about how his first couple of times putting on gloves and everything, they like whipped him down and they were awkward, and he didn't think like I could ever throw a punch, let alone be a heavyweight prize fighter or anything like that. You have to get through the grime to kind of get to the good, oftentimes.
Absolutely. I think as long as the universe hasn't told me yet that it's ruled out my possibility of being a writer, it's all good.
When it comes to early influences, some of your favorite poets or work, who are some of those? Who are some of the early influences you had?
I like the mystic poets, and when you hear some of mine, you'll see where I was influenced. Mm-hmm. John Donne, and I know a little bit about him. He was a priest in England. He's the one that wrote the one, I can't think of the title of it, but the famous line of no man is an island, and all of that, and everybody's a part of it, and don't ask whom the bell tolls. And he thought he was dying of the Black Plague, and he was really angry at everybody, I think including God, because he was just ordained as a priest and he was going to do great works. And then he wrote this beautiful stuff that people remember when he thought he was dying, and then he didn't die.
Oh,
and so I
awkward.
That, yeah, awkward. So to me, that's just a powerful story. And then William Blake's another one.
Oh wow! Yeah.
Oh my gosh! You know.
Yeah. I as a side note, I have no doubt that is how I will go out. That'll happen to me. I will go and tell everybody off, and then like 2 days, like an hour later, the doctor will call me. Yeah, wrong test result.
Yeah,
sorry,
you're
about
fine.
That.
You're gonna live another 100 years. Yeah,
I'll spend the rest of my life apologizing. We were in our pregame. We were talking a little bit about Hunter S. Thompson and everything, and certainly one of my bigger influences, just as a human being, let alone as a writer. But I found when I was first starting, one of the best things to happen to me was coming across Jack Kerouac. And Kerouac, for those that have not read Jack Kerouac, Jack did not like grammar. Did not use a lot of punctuation. Did a lot of run-on sentences, a lot of that stuff and everything. But here it is, this author that my mother looks up to and all this and all these other people that I admire look up to. Well-published author, very famous author, but yet I read his work and I'm like, wait a minute. That's not what they taught me in school. This isn't how I'm supposed to write. I was told that I had to write this way, but this guy made it happen this way. Uncle Tom's Cabin was another big influence for me too, where they wrote how people talk, and like, well, I hadn't read a lot of books like that. I think for young writers out there, that's a big one to come across. Just like we were talking about the grime and the work that we're not proud of, that nobody will ever see. These are things that are important for people, young writers and young creatives, to learn to know. There's no wrong necessarily way of doing this. Mm-hmm. Just because you get turned down, or you may think that somebody says the work isn't good, that doesn't mean necessarily that it's bad. It may mean that, you know, maybe it's just not the right audience, or maybe you just need to get back to it and keep working at it.
Yeah, I think if you stick with anything long enough and get past the naysayers, you'd get to a point. I mean, the point for me in writing, I've been writing for about 49 years now, and I don't have anything out there where I've had any big fame or big money. But I'm really happy with what I'm writing now, and so it almost doesn't matter about the other things.
We enjoy talking with local creatives about this because of some of that, what you're talking about right there. When it comes to what got you to believe that you could do this, like some of the things that you first wrote that you were like, oh, wait a minute, I got something here. I think I should keep at this. I think I should keep doing that. How old were you when that happened? How long had you been writing when that happened? And was there a certain piece or a certain work that did that?
Well, it's been a struggle. And there are times when I was really angry about my writing, because I thought that when I was 17 or 18, it'd be a short run to getting my book out and then being able to make a living at it. I think a lot of people get caught in that delusion. Mm-hmm. And in, I think, summer of 77, I hitched out with a buddy to L.A. and back. That's the whole story.
Wow.
That'll be the second show.
Yeah, that'll be another show. But on the way back, my backpack got stolen at a truck stop in Wyoming. Mm-hmm. And this was not a wise thing to do. So I thought, going to L.A., and I was kind of a shy person, I thought, how am I going to make conversation with people? I mean, I knew my friend, but all the people he grew up with, I didn't know him. I'd never been to California. And so I thought, well, if I bring some original artwork, sketches, and I bring original poems, but I didn't make copies, I'll have something to show. Like, if somebody gets into talking about it, I can say, hey, you want to read one of my poems? Well, that backpack got stolen with all the original stuff on the way back. And so I had to kind of start over at that point.
Huh. Was that, and that sounds like that actually had a silver lining to it, it sounds like.
It did. It did, and one of the poems that was a pretty long poem, it took me about a year to reconstruct it.
Wow.
And the other ones I thought, well, they're not that good, it doesn't matter. But that one poem, I really wanted to get a hold of it again.
Do you think you have to figure out the meaning of a poem before you write it, or can it be something that happens in the development stage?
You get some good questions here. you get right to the deep stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's good. I like to talk about these things. I write differently. I'm so much happier with the way I write now, and I could almost say I switched the hemispheres of my brain by which I write. I used to do it very left hemisphere, and I would come up with a theme, and I'd come up with a line or two, and I'd say, I gotta come up with a poem that fits this, and it never worked very well because it was very artificial. It's like, okay, I gotta make something happen, and now I just try to be attentive to inspiration, and I just try to, and sometimes I wake up at odd times, and I have a line or two, and I go, do I have to get up and write it down, or will I remember it 3 or 4 hours from now?
I hear you on that one. Oh, that hit close to home then.
But so much happier with doing it out of inspiration, and I really don't know a lot of times what is going to happen on the page at the end.
I think some of the best stuff creatively happens that way. Mm-hmm. It's nothing against having an idea and a plot or a point or anything like that, but as somebody who is a lover of improv in all its forms, I think that some of the best work happens that way. We're speaking with Rick Humphreys, a local poet. We are going to take a quick commercial break here at Director's Cut. We'll come back, we'll have some readings from Rick, and we'll have some more fun on Director's Cut.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. My training helps me at work when I lead by example. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my community and those I care about safe from threats. Learn more about how you too can live and serve part-time close to home by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Max Inc. Radio with Dennis Graham from Rockonson.
Appreciate all the support of Mad Radio 92.7. And by the way, a tip of the hat to Civic Media. That was a great article on the Cap Times by Paul Fanlon. You guys got a great model that you're growing around the state, local interest with radio stations throughout these different markets. And a tip of the hat, and you're focusing on local music and nobody's doing it. So great job.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday night, 6 to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back to Director's Cut, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us, Rick and I was going to say Rick and James. Rick, James and Seth here with you. We're speaking with Rick Humphreys, local poet, and we're going to move out of the way and let Rick have the stage now.
Okay, the first poem I'm going to share is called The Silence. They chained and muffled me, said they had no choice. Still, they could not quiet the voice. It speaks with or without a mouth. It speaks from within, it speaks from without. It speaks through the chaos and it speaks through the noise. And if you listen, you too can hear that still small voice. The silence howled and the silence roared until it was not silent anymore. It opened its mouth and swallowed me whole, and that's the only wholeness I have ever known. And all these things that I write about is just my feeble attempt to let the silence out. Wage war with your silence, you'll hear nothing but noise. Wage peace with your silence, you'll hear that one true voice. Wage war with your suffering, and you'll have more of it. Wage peace with your suffering, and you'll learn something from it. So the world gouged out my eyes with its blindness, and put a gun to my head, and I repaid it with kindness.
Ooh. The visuals in that are just clear to me, and I imagine to anybody that hears that they're going to have their own visuals in their head. Was there some of that intended in that to create that in people's minds? That some like putting themselves in the person's shoes almost.
I don't know. This was one I was influenced by a book I read also called The Silence by Jane Brox. And she talked about people seeking silence for religious, for revelation reasons, and also as a punishment for people in prison. And I thought, how can this silence be both things?
Yeah.
That's really, really extreme. So that helped. But once I got into this poem, I wasn't very intentional. I just, I got a couple of lines and it just started to come out and I just let it come.
Ah, it's really nice work.
Yes. Very Thanks. Nice.
You want me to continue?
Yeah,
and,
okay. Yeah.
So this one's a little shorter, called Dignity. Deprive me of my dignity, and you'll unleash the beast in me. Slowly I will become a shadow of a shadow of the man that I'm meant to be. But give me back my dignity, and I will try to understand the expectations that you have for me as you draw your lines in the sand.
That one feels felt a little personal, was it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a public speaker on mental health, and I share my own struggles. So that definitely comes into my poetry. I'm going to be honest about that. So yes, I've had issues where I felt like my dignity was taken away.
Yeah. So often that happens with mental health issues. And while we're getting better as a society about, we're not talking like this anymore about mental health, we're talking like this. The more attention, the more we can bring it up, the topic, because it's such got so many gray areas to it, I think can never be enough. So that's really cool to hear. And thank you for doing the work that you're doing on that, too.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, much appreciated. Guys.
You bet.
Let's get one more in before the a break here.
Okay, this is called New Creation. Like you, I once thought that black holes were events out in space and did not concern me, but I was mistaken. Black holes are not just events that occur out in space when a star collapses, but they're also events that occur in the human heart when a life collapses so that a better life can come. Then when I recognize that the world outside is a map pointing to the world within, I decided that I wanted to meet the map maker. So I built up my world, and he knocked it down. And I built it up again, and he knocked it down again. And I built it up, and he knocked it down. And then one day I realized that the one that I thought was my enemy was really my friend, and I invited him in. He just wanted me to live in a bigger mansion with a better view. The depression coalesced into muscles and bones, locking them into inflexible poses. I braced for death in the same position by which I had entered this world. And then, when all gravity collapsed and I was hurled unending inward, I made a decision to grasp the only hand being offered me there and to trust. Now, large and powerful, I penetrated my black hole prison and I entered a world exactly inverse to the one I had departed from. From the sea of questions to an ocean of understanding, from the unsolvable to the unstoppable, I ventured forth a new creation.
I was looking forward to meeting you, to talking with you, to hearing some of your work. I didn't expect to become a fan in the middle of your work, because you have an instant fan right here, sir. That is you've won me over in the first three works, if not the first one. Especially because, and I think this is part of what pulls me to poetry, what pulls a lot of people to poetry, is my brain works in metaphors, works in examples and comparisons so much, and that's so much a part of some poetry work. And in this one in particular, I feel a little of that. I feel a little bit of that going on. Was that part of your kind of idea going into it, or something that happened organically while you were writing it? If it's even there, we project too with work too.
Well. On a lot of poems, if you ask me what the origin or what the experience, I'd say, I don't know. I just started writing. This one is very specific. Okay. I had a mystical or a spiritual experience that was long-lasting, not chemically induced. You have to say that because, you know, otherwise you don't know what people are thinking. Uh-huh.
It's not Aaron Rodgers here, you know.
yeah, exactly. But it happened in the spring of 85. I didn't have an adequate vocabulary. I knew it was a good experience because ultimately I got some healing in a mental health way and in a spiritual way. But I didn't know who to share it with, and I probably was so excited about the experience afterwards, I babbled. I talked, you know how when somebody talks so fast, you can't hear a word they say? I probably was like that guy, and people either they ridiculed or they didn't believe it, and I kind of went underground with it. And then I read some other books later about those experiences, and it took me, it was 16 years later, I was at a writing retreat in Massachusetts. That they said write about experience, and the kernel of this it took 16 years to have the vocabulary to start to tell it. And then when I was participating in poetry slams a few years ago, because you need meaty poems to have a chance to get through three rounds, and so I kind of then added to it. So it from the time of the experience, the time of completing this poem was probably 30 some years.
Wow. That is so cool. That is such
really
an interesting.
Remarkable.
Yeah, that is really interesting. I think that also touches on some things for people. I find as I get older and I bring this up with more and more people that I'm not alone on this one. I think that's true for a lot of subjects for a lot of us. I'm not the only one. You too. Like that kind of thing happens a lot. Growing up, I was really sensitive about my intelligence, and I felt like every room I was in, I was the dumbest person in the room instead of that person that always feels like they're the smartest person. I was the exact opposite. And I worked so hard to, have a bigger lexicon, have a bigger, vocabulary and all these things, because I thought that would make me seem smart. But in the process of learning about all that stuff is what really, truly, I don't think I'm smart, but helped me get at least enough to pull it off a little bit here. Try to do that kind of thing. It's funny how art can give that to you. How art, you do it for the art, but yet it's the art that actually gives it to you. It's such a giving thing, and I don't think we often think about that with art or what it gives to us. We put so much into it, and our focus is that and creating and all that, as it should be, because that's what we do as creatives. But it gives so much back sometimes that we don't necessarily always see. When it comes to writing poetry, and this can be certainly a case-by-case thing, but do you think that the poem should be read aloud or experienced silently on the page?
If you would have asked me a decade ago, I would have said, just put it on the page, put it in a book. I've really changed my tune after participating in poetry slams and seeing how vocal inflection, and I've had people tell me that when I did it aloud, they got something that they didn't get if I just handed them the page.
Right.
So I'm much more of a fan of the performance aspect of it.
You know, we've all had this happen with a text. You just text to somebody, "How you doing?" But they read it, "How you doing?" Like, oh, wait a minute, what's this? Why did they send me that and everything? There's no tone to text. There's no tone to the written word and everything. There's a part of me that thinks that that's kind of fun creatively for every person. You know, I look at a painting and I'm going to get something different than you will from it, Rick. And I think that with poetry, when you could do that with writing, that's pretty cool. But I more so lean towards where you're going with that, too, where I love the intention kind of being there for people. And you get a lot more of that intention in spoken word.
Do you guys know the 7-38-55 rule?
A little bit, yeah. I remember it a long time ago hearing it. Yes.
Well, I think you should say it now.
Yeah.
for people who may not know what it is.
For those that don't know.
Okay, and I might get this a little bit off.
That's okay.
But the 7% of communication is the words that are used. 38% is the tone of the words and the pauses and the inflection, all the accent of it. And 55% is gestures and body language.
Wow. Which all comes into play when you're reading poetry aloud. I mean, think of just acting on the stage. It's very similar. Very similar to that. We're going to take another break right now, everybody, and we'll be back shortly here. More with Rick Humphries on Director's Cut.
Let's face it. Life looks a little different. During these times, we're doing our best to keep our minds and bodies strong. And getting a flu shot helps us stay healthy, so we don't miss out on what matters. Like having game night at home. Yeah, can't do that while sick with the flu. Now imagine family movie night that your daughter can't live without. Well, that's ruined. And don't forget your uncle's socially distanced cookout. See? That's why it's important to be at our strongest. Every year, millions of people in the U.S. get the flu. Especially now, no one has time to miss out on moments that matter. So get your flu shot. Find out more at getmyflushot.org. Brought to you by the AMA, CDC, and the Ad Council.
Weather brought to you by you and your great business. For just $100 a week, this sponsorship is designed to drive traffic to your website.
But the offer absolutely ends March 15th. Log on civicmedia.us/weather. civicmedia.us/weather.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. A winter weather advisory continues until 4 a.m. early tomorrow morning. Snow likely tonight, otherwise overcast. Lows around 21, north winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Chance for snow tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 29, cloudy. Lows dip down to about 3 above tomorrow night, 1 to 3 inches of snow tonight. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 27.
Welcome back to Director's Cut, everybody. We're sitting with Rick Humphreys, and Rick's going to have some more readings for us here. Rick, what do you got for your next one?
It's called Orphans.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Okay. Here goes. All the clocks in heaven and the clocks on earth agree that it's 5 minutes till midnight on the sixth day of creation, and the lease on this planet will not be renewed. The hedge that mankind has put up since the beginning of time that obscures the face of God is going down, and the foundation upon which the empires of the elite have ruled the world with an iron fist is cracking at the seams. Soon, the tables will be turned. So I am asking those without hands to clink your glasses together in celebration. I am asking the voiceless to speak truth to power. I am asking those who are hobbling around on charred stumps from walking on hot coals to walk with me just a little bit longer, because very soon those who have been stuck to the bottom of the earth will get unstuck. For those who are so mortally wounded that they cannot recognize their own reflection in a mirror, I say to you, do not despair. In the next life, we will all have new faces. Now, I will not tell you which of these descriptors I resemble, but I will share with you this clump of words that sticks in my throat like a hairball, all the while screaming for release. Orphans of the world, unite. Come in from the endless night. Rest your weary, torn-up feet from walking on shards of broken dreams and promises that do not yield. Hope, when planted, but a minefield. And sit a spell with other folk who, like you, are broken and full of holes.
Ooh. Where did that one come? Where? How did that one begin for you?
I don't know. I think that my struggle for sanity, my mental health, mm-hmm. and my spirituality, I think mm-hmm. that... and. It kind of comes into this, and sure. I don't even see where it's coming in. It mm-hmm. just yeah. I write what I want to write, and somehow those things kind of inform the poetry. Yeah.
Do you have a kind of a technical question? Is there any forms that you play around with, or is it just when you're writing, it's basically just go with the flow kind of thing? What feels right? What the rhythm is?
Well, I could say that the point at which I started writing these kind of things that I feel good about, that was only about a decade ago. Mm-hmm. And the quality and quantity of my poetry started changing. And that was when I kind of switched from trying to make things happen and just tried to be open to wherever the inspiration was.
Gotcha.
So I don't know when I'm in the middle of any of these kind of things. I
right.
have no idea what's going to happen. And when I see it, there's something mysterious. It's like a gift.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Thank you. All right.
Okay, this one, I'm going to give a little backstory, and this one could be a little controversial. It's called Church with No Door. So it's based on a couple things. It's based on a book I read years ago by Michael Card, who's also a Christian musician. And there was a chapter on Vincent van Gogh, the artist, that just fascinated me. I'd never heard this, that when he was living in Belgium, he wanted to be a priest. And he kept applying to the priesthood in his early days as an artist. And he kept getting turned down. And finally, they told him, don't bother to apply again. And it broke his heart. And he did a piece of artwork called Church with No Doors, where there's no way to get into the church.
It's a great story.
And I've also had some experiences myself with that struggle, which is not to say anything bad about, in general, what goes on. There's some wonderful things that go on in churches, but I've had times when, you know, it didn't work out for me. So it's a short poem, and it's a long intro to a short poem. So here's the poem. I reached out to knock on the church with no door, with broken hands and withered fingers. The gatekeeper said, I can't let you in. There's no longer a sacrifice left for your sin. Weary, distressed, I turned about and prayed for a door for those inside to get out.
Oh, wow.
Ooh. You know, we were speaking about mental health before, and I think with when it comes to a subject like that, especially our relationships with not only ourselves and our own soul, but our relationships with our God, with our life, all those things kind of come into play. And one of the things that can, you know, just to example wise, I come from a family. My mother's Jewish. My father's Catholic. We were not baptized, my brother, sister, and I. The biggest influence of my life, my mother, my grandmother, my Nana, all very religious people. So growing up, I felt like, well, I should be religious. Why wouldn't I be? They are. Why wouldn't I be if I want to be a smart and a great creative person like they are? But I also was told, you don't fake these things. That's not something you do. And so I wasn't born with a lot of faith. My brain is very logical and very, well, if I see it, I can believe it kind of thing and all that. And so I would start praying. And my first prayer was, God, help me see you. God, help me believe. God, help me have faith. Why don't I have faith? Where is it? And this idea that I couldn't, it was something that I couldn't reach, that I couldn't attain. And as I got older and I start talking about these things more with other people and rabbis and priests and all this stuff, I start to realize there is no wrong way to believe. There is no wrong way to do this. It's okay. I thought I was praying wrong. And I'll never forget the rabbi laughing hysterically at that. And James, there's no wrong way to pray. It's okay. To me, I don't think that there's a wrong way to have faith, to believe, even if that means that you don't have any faith. Mm-hmm. I think that if you believe in God, then you can believe that he's going to love you no matter what. There's no line in the sand. There is no such thing as a vengeful God. There is a God that is, and all that stuff. Now, to each their own and what they believe. Mm-hmm. But all that stuff leads to questions and what to do with those questions and what to do with that searching. And I feel a lot of that in that work.
Yeah, I mean, I feel I've had a lot of struggle. That's just another area of struggle, go a lot of different ways. And so I found my faith that I can have a connection with God and that it doesn't depend on other people that may approve or not approve of the particular beliefs I have and everything and how I move forward.
We'll go ahead and have you read another one here.
Okay. I'm getting to shorter ones. I have all sizes, but this is actually kind of along with what we're talking about. I wrote this on Christmas Day a decade ago and decided it's one thing I want read at my funeral. So it's called Resurrection Day. Where I died, now flowers bloom. In the old me, there was no room. No living water, soil, or air, surrounded by my coffin there. Now that I've died, I can live on, lifted by the hands of God.
similar to some of the other things we were talking about there, but that's a great one. I also think that if you want something read at your funeral or anything like that, anything to do with resurrection seems good.
Yeah,
seems like a good idea.
Like that fit in with the general theme of
slide that in there. Yeah, that's really good, Rick. That's really good. Seth and James here with you, and we're speaking with Rick Humphreys. Rick, I had a couple questions for you, and then we'll get back to some of your work. Do you write things other than poetry? Have you tried to write things other than poetry?
Yeah, actually I do. I write advocacy kind of things. I've even written suggestions for law enforcement when they're dealing with people with mental health issues.
Wow.
My top 10 suggestions.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Which has actually been well received by some people in local law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
So I write, I do legislative advocacy too on some things, and I also write short stories.
Very cool.
Very cool.
Yeah, right on. And I think that's great for young writers out there. If you pick up and I want to be an author, or I want to be a novelist, or that kind of thing, I think it's good to try poetry and vice versa. I think it makes you a more complete writer, or helps you find your voice as a writer, I should say. Do you share your work while it's in the process? Do you find it important to have kind of a support group as you're working on these things, or do you no, nobody can see this until it's done?
No, I tried the nobody could see this thing for a number of years. It didn't work out very well for me, because part of the motivation in any creative venture is you want to share it with somebody. If you put work into it, you want somebody to see it, even if they just say that's interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's better than all alone and nobody cares. So I'm involved with the writers group at the library.
Mm-hmm.
And
cool.
Share things there. And then with another gentleman that kind of hooked me into it as a co-facilitator, we're doing also a writing group we just started up at the Cultural Center.
Cool. Oh, wow. Very good. Oh, that's awesome. I just had Stephanie in the other day and we were talking about it. That's really cool. That's a really good group and a great idea to do, too. So many writers around here. And it's I think one of the best things that happened to me as a creative was when I finally started sharing my work or being open to sharing it. And, you know, whether it was good, pot, it's all feedback. There's no good or bad feedback. It's all feedback. It's all data and stuff that we can take and learn from. And having a support group can go so much farther for your confidence and you're developing your voice.
And people that care about the writing. I mean, I've always had friends and acquaintances that I could share something with them, and they'd always say, well, that's interesting, which there's no way to discern that. It's kind of inscrutable.
Yeah.
Interesting, okay, they don't want to hear anymore. But I want people, actually, even if they're critical, that care about writing. So,
Do you have any of your work published? Is there any way people can take in, or how can people take in your work?
I'm starting to work on that, wanting to do that. So that's something coming up. I do have some short stories that are will be published. I've placed or won in library contests at the McMillan Library. So I have three short stories that when they get enough for a book will be in that.
Yep.
Very cool. Oh, I can't wait for that to happen, man. That's going to be very cool. And congratulations about those, what you won at the library and all that. That's very cool. I know my daughter won something from that, and she's about 25, 26, and you would have thought that she won a Nobel Prize. Like, she was so excited. She was so happy. Did such a... And she struggles a bit with confidence from time to time, but I noticed that more of those kind of things, and it's not so much about winning something as it is the recognition of somebody, hey, somebody thought my work was cool. I should keep doing this. That the kind of encouragement is always nice to hear for our creatives. That's great.
Yeah, nobody wants to be invisible.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So. Do you have any rituals when it comes to writing, when it comes to sitting down and writing or anything? I know I have to have, even if I'm not going to use it, a typewriter nearby, a sharpened pencil, a paper, because I just don't know how I'm going to want to write. Sometimes I feel like writing on paper, or I write on my laptop or that kind of thing. Do you have anything like that?
No, I'm kind of I've tried, you know, setting aside certain days, certain times. That does not work for me. But what also doesn't work is if I go out and don't think I'm going to have an inspiration, I don't have pen and paper. So I'm somebody that has to have, if I go out on a bike ride and I'm out on a highway somewhere, I may not remember whatever it is till I get back from my bike ride. Or when I'm doing laundry, I get some great inspirations where I'm going, how did this idea come from doing laundry. It's not about laundry.
Yeah.
Bring your napkins. Bring your napkins with. Yes. Yeah.
Laundry or making the bed like is when these ideas will pop in my head. And before I'm even throwing the pillows back on the bed, the idea's gone. It's so frustrating. I hear you. It's a good one. When it comes to advice, advice maybe you have received or advice you would like to give to young creatives out there, to people that are doing this, whether they, and when I say young, I don't mean by age. I mean maybe they just picked up and started to write and they're 55, or maybe they are 15. Who knows? To people out there, is there anything that you've been told or that you could think, hey, this is something I wish I had heard earlier on?
I just think don't give up. Keep hope alive, because every day that I get out of bed and I think I can do something that might be of interest to somebody, I might be able to get published, I might have somebody that wants to hear this, it is a good day. And hope is just an easy thing to give other people. Mm-hmm. I can have hope for other people and give it to them, and I don't lose any hope.
Very nice.
I really like that.
That's good.
Rick, we have one more question for you, and then we'll have you do a little reading to wrap, kind of play us out here, if you will. We ask this question to all of our guests. It's probably the toughest question we are going to ask you today. If you could have coffee with any historical figure, who and why?
Well, I have listened to a couple of
right
your
on. Good on. Yeah. So, smart. So that's a smart guest.
I did come in totally where...
it's no longer a gotcha question.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah.
That's all right. No, that's cool.
Now, I could make you a long list, but you want one person. So I love the music, both the music and the lyrics of Van Morrison. I've been following him through it. He's still making music. He's been making it since I think he started even before Dylan in the 50s.
Yeah. I didn't think of that. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Wow. Great choice. That's a nice one. Huh. Yeah. We've had some really good ones. And they're all like kind of out of left field, if you will. I love that. That's fantastic. Yeah. So why don't we go ahead and let you go ahead and have the stage for a moment, Rick. Read us a couple more if you don't mind.
Okay, and you'll have to let me know if time's running out.
Sure,
Okay. This one, kind of in the same theme with some of the other ones, it's called Us and Them. And it's a good thing. I want to say I'm grateful that titles can't be copyrighted, because obviously there's the Pink Floyd song. And so, you know, I'm really not taking away from somebody. I'm allowed to do that. Yeah. So, okay. Avoid those who would judge you. They cannot comprehend the reason you are you and the reason they are them. Just because you can point a finger at the darkness doesn't mean you have the light. And just because you call a man evil doesn't mean you're in the right. Judge me not, and I'll tell you a story. Judge me, and the story ends. You can kill a man with the heel of your hand, or you can do it with paper and pen. You can legislate a man out of existence, and what will he do then? He'll rant and he'll rave where no one will hear, and then he'll become that thing that we fear. No one knows the border of another man's cage, from the strength of his spirit to the depths of his rage. Whether his soul lies dormant or shackled in torment, still you do judge him to make him feel small. Won't you lay down your gavel? You don't know him at all. Now you don't understand me, and I don't understand you. Therefore, we have an understanding. You can either judge or you can understand, but you can't do both at the same time.
That may be my favorite one yet. There are some incredibly strong lines in there, sir. That's really well written. I think, too, one of the cool things about something like that, similar to what I was talking about with like art, is what I get from it and what Seth gets from it may be completely different. Mm-hmm. With something like that, it's a little direct, but it still comes down to that. Like, you're going to get your own interpretation out of it. What was your interpretation for it?
Well, I just have experienced a lot of things where people inadequately and uninformed, they judge, whether it's whole groups of people or individuals, and they're like, even in our imperfect criminal justice system, and they have evidence that somebody's done a terrible thing, they still allow that person to come up and give their story mm-hmm. to mitigate the sentence. And some people make judgment without any mitigation, without hearing the person's human story, and it just bothers me.
When I was a kid, my friends and I, we'd be bopping around all over Southside Chicago, and we had to take a shortcut, and we were walking, and we actually went past a synagogue, and as a Jewish person, I thought, oh, this is really cool. It was by accident it happened. As we're walking past, we get past it, and all of a sudden we have somebody yell at us, and it was this rabbi, the same one that I actually mentioned earlier. This was my first interaction with him, and he was screaming at us because there was graffiti on the sidewalk in front of the building, and it wasn't. I don't remember what it was or anything, but it was graffiti, and he looked at us and thought we had done it and started blaming us. And one of the things on it must have been something that was anti-Semitic or whatever, because he looked right at me and said, you know, this is wrong, this is hateful. And I look at him, and all I said was, but I'm like you. I didn't know what to say. I was a kid. I didn't have any articulate thing to say. I ended up telling him about my background and that and everything. And he immediately apologized, welcomed us in. We got to know. And I ended up, becoming a bit of a, I don't want to say a mentor, but somebody that I could go to later, at least two or three times in my life that I would end up doing that. But his own prejudice, seeing us, which was kind of funny looking back at it and everything. I'm probably not going to do the anti-Semitic thing. You know, that doesn't make a lot of sense for me. Seems very self-defeating. But it was one of those things where we both learned in that moment. And I learned right away that I was judging him too, just because he was a religious figure. And I thought, I can't talk to him. He's not going to want to listen to me. I'm not baptized, or I'm not this, or I'm not, you know. We both learned in that moment. I think that a lot of that stuff, so much of our fears stem from misunderstanding and not being willing to hear somebody out or ask a question.
And we all have to admit we make those mistakes. Yep. Because mm-hmm. everybody judges whether they do it vocally or just in their own minds. And just to know that it's a mistake and we can do better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think, Seth? We got time for one more?
Yeah, let's wrap it up.
Okay,
yeah.
Let's have one more here from you, if you don't mind.
Okay, and this is going to have a totally different tone to it, but this is the one that people liked the best when I was doing the poetry slam. Mm. So it's... Oh, different direction, Ramblin' Ode to Dylan, numbers 11 and 36. A poet gets knocked down 39 times just trying to find that perfect rhyme. He doesn't have to be loved, doesn't want to be hated, just wants his poetry and his parking validated. I once searched for truth, but I could not find it, so I went to the bar to anesthetize it. There I met a woman with a leopard skin pillbox hat, and she decided she liked me, just like that. And she took me out of my awful quandary and said, hey, babe, I got to do my laundry. So she got things started at the laundromat and said, I'll be back in 40 minutes flat. But her delicates in the dryer, they hypnotized me and accidentally supersized me. And when she returned, though my budget was small, I said, hey, babe, you could have anything. Anything at all. She said, you idiot, you ruined my laundry, and she proceeded to break up with me. So I went into the men's room to cry, but the tissues there were only 2-ply, and I had at least a 4-ply tear. So I said, I gotta get out of here. I will seek the counsel of someone wise, or at least some poor fool who will sympathize. I once knew a man who knew it all. And then I watched him plummet and fall, and in the end, he didn't even know his name or where he lived or anything. He kept trying to comb his hair with a dollar store comb, and he didn't have any hair. So now you've come to the end of the story with me, and you probably think it just another pointless exercise in futility. But hey, at least we all got some exercise.
Oh, I like that one. Yeah. I have to think that some of the intention of the delivery of that is a little Dylan-esque. I like it. It really pulled me in right away.
I just read the reference to Leopardskin Pillbox Hat. I just played that song on my Sunday night show. So I was like, oh, that's a good one. That's awesome. Good one. Yeah.
One of the things that I love when we're doing tributes is the style of the tribute, the way we show tribute, the way we show thankfulness, kind of, in a way, and at the same time making something their own. That, to me, hearing you read that felt like when I hear somebody cover a song really well. While it wasn't a cover, of course, it felt a little like that. Yeah. That's a good one, man. That's a nice one to wrap up on.
Yeah, too. I need that. It is indeed.
Rick, thank you so much for joining us. Again, if people want to keep up, just to keep an ear out and stuff and see, well, where's Rick if he's going to do any spoken word stuff? Or where, you know, is Rick going to have something published? Is there a way that we're somewhere we can send them to keep an eye out for you, or we'll just make sure to let them know here on the show?
I don't do any social media.
Okay. Right on, brother.
Yeah. So to say, same here. The same with him. Yes.
But I'm around town, and so, you know, at the cultural center with activities, at the library with writing things. There's an open mic up at a bookstore in Point once a month. I go to that. So
yeah.
I'm around.
Right on. All right. And you'll be around again on this show, Rick. You did too good of a job. You're going to have to come back. That's the catch.
Well, we need the hitchhiking story now.
Yes.
California. This was way too much fun, you guys. I appreciate
good,
it.
Good to hear. Thank you so much for the time, Rick.
Thank you, guys.
Got a few minutes left here, so I thought, why don't we do some of our poems that we really like? And so, James, we'll start with you.
This is Maya Angelou's Caged Bird. A free bird leaps on the back of the wind and floats downstream till the current ends and dips his wings in the orange sun rays and dares to claim the sky. But a bird that stalks down his narrow cage can seldom see through his bars of rage. His wings are clipped, his feet are tired, so he opens his throat to sing. The cage bird sings with a fearful trill of things unknown but longed for still, and his tune is heard on the distant hill, for the cage bird sings of freedom. The free bird thinks of another breeze, and that trade winds soft through the sighting trees, and the far worms waiting on a dawn bright lawn, and he names the sky his own. But a cage bird stands on the grave of dreams, his shadow shouts on a nightmare scream, his wings are clipped and his feet are tired, so he opens his throat to sing. The cage bird sings with a fearful trill of things unknown but longed for still, and his tune is heard on the distant hill, for the cage bird sings of freedom.
Very nice, very nice. That's a classic, of course, and I immediately think of Buckshot LaFunk. I just got to put that out there.
Me too, brother.
Because she gets to read it herself on that one. It's a great piece of music.
And she does a much better job.
Still, it's a great piece of poetry. So for me, I'm going to do one. I just ran across this one recently, and I thought, wow, this is really cool. This is by the New York poet Frank O'Hara. He was kind of the new school the New York school in the mid-50s. It was a kind of a different, very, very intensely personal kind of poetry. Yes. And this is interesting because this one he wrote the day after Billie Holiday died.
Huh.
It's called The Day Lady Died. It is 12:20 in New York, a Friday, 3 days after Bastille Day. Yes, it is 1959, and I go get a shoe shine because I will get off at the 419 in East Hampton at 7:15, and then go straight to dinner, and I don't know the people who will feed me. I walk up the muggy street beginning to sun and have a hamburger and a malted and buy an ugly New York writing to see what the poets in Ghana are doing these days. I go to the bank and Miss Stillwagon, first name Linda I once heard, doesn't even look up my balance for once in her life, and in the Golden Griffin I get a little Verlaine for Patsy with drawings by Bernard, although I do think of Hesiod, translator Richard Lattimore, or Brandon Behan's new play, or La Bajon, or Les Nigres by Genet, but I don't. I stick with Verlaine, after practically going to sleep with Quandariness. And for Mike, I just stroll into the Park Lane liquor store and ask for a bottle of Strega, and then I go back where I came from to 6th Avenue and the tobacconist in the Ziegfeld Theater, and casually ask for a carton of Galoises and a carton of Picayunes and a New York Post with her face on it. And I'm sweating a lot now, and thinking of leaning on the John door in the five spot, while she whispered a song along the keyboard to Moll Waldron, and everyone and I stopped breathing.
Oh, I haven't heard that in a long time. Mm-hmm. I really liked your rendition. That was very nice. That was very nicely done.
I didn't really know that much about it till just recently, and I thought, wow, what a great piece.
I'm going to pull an audible here.
Oh, great.
And I, if it couldn't help, I wanted to do one of my own, if you don't mind.
Oh, not at all.
I wrote this about a year or so ago.
Okay.
Running where angels fear to tread, putting to words what can't be said. Some in the dark learn to see. Sometimes it takes the bad doing good to create something free. Not about who we hope to be. It's embracing who you're meant to be.
Thanks so much, everyone, for listening to Director's Cut this week. We do appreciate all the feedback we've gotten, and thanks. We love the poetry. We're going to keep it coming as much as we can. Thank you very much to Rick Humphreys for joining us this week. And we will see you again next week on Director's Cut.
Chris Domine is a husband and a father. Chris is an athlete. Chris is even an Iron Man. But 10
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.